Good afternoon and welcome to the Mesa City Council study session for July the 5th. I would like to excuse Councilmember Finter, who is ill and not with us. The first item on our agenda is to review the agenda for tonight's council meeting. And then because we do not have another study session prior to the July 11th meeting, we will review that agenda as well. So let's look first at the formal council agenda for July the 5th. Currently, everything is on the consent agenda, I believe. No, we do have a public hearing, okay, at the end. But council, please look at the agenda for tonight, July the 5th. Agenda item 3 are various purchase contracts. 4 are various resolutions. I noticed 4D is of note. This is the reduction of the tax rate. That's probably worth noting. I'm not sure that it's worth taking off the consent agenda or not, but just so everyone, Mr. Brady, remind me, people's taxes aren't being lowered, but the tax rate
Lowered. Yes, well, our levy is directly related to our debt service payment. So as values in the city go up, we adjust the rate so that we can generate the exact the amount of money we need to pay off our debt service. So this is good news because what it means is that values in the city of Mesa are growing. So it allows us to adjust the rate down, but still create the same amount of payment for our debt service.
Well, that's a good message to say, and now that we've done it in study session, maybe that checks that box, but everyone feel comfortable leaving that on consent then? Okay. Agenda item 5 are the introduction of various ordinances. 6 is to receive public comment on those, on other ordinances. 7 are various subdivision plats. And then 8, we do have 8A off of the consent agenda, which is to conduct a public hearing prior to the release of the petition for an annexation case. Council, anything you'd like taken off the consent agenda? Okay, hearing none, let's move on then to the agenda for July the 11th. Again, agenda item 3 are various purchase contracts.
3D. We have a police IT division and a city IT division. Just wanting to understand the correlation between those two IT departments. You know, I've always often wondered why we don't have a single IT department for everybody. Just wanted to ask if how those two entities are working together to make sure that that project is successful. I don't know the capacity of either organizations. I mean, I know the capacity of the city IT, but I don't.
Right. So it's great. Thank you for the question, Mayor Councilor Richens. So there has been quite a bit of progress made in sharing of resources and, more importantly, philosophy of how we're going to create a larger system that everybody. So we're buying similar equipment and network systems, so that's a big step in the right direction. So now there is a lot more collaboration between police IT and the citywide ITD. I think more and more we're looking for opportunities to combine resources and not have duplicative resources in any specific department related to these types of services. So we have made great progress, and we're continuing to look for opportunities where without compromising security or confidentiality, we can have overlapping resources and services. And so we have made, through purchasing, through the networking systems and hardware systems, we've made a lot of improvements.
Okay, thank you.
This is essentially just purchasing storage of the closed circuit cameras in the at the holding facility, right?
Correct.
And I know another big ticket item is storage for our officer mounted cameras. So it seems like a lot of the expense related to IT is really just purchasing. It's not necessarily anything on our at our facility, or it's just purchasing memory from outside vendors.
You're going to see, I think there's another item that addresses that from the citywide perspective, too.
Yeah. 3I.
Let's see. The auditing system, and maybe Joe can come help me, is really a system to help protect against cyber attacks. 3J, yeah, now there you go. 3J is increasing, I think that's, no, 3J is actually moving, was is part of that. Joe, come on up, don't be shy. Please. So 3J is accomplishing a couple of different things. One, it is allowing us to move our a significant part of our data center over to the AT&T building, which is significant because that is a facility intended for that purpose. But it is also working on our ability to begin vacating that ITD building on this campus also over the, hopefully in the short term, as we look for possibility of planning other activities in that area. But there's a lot of other advantages to that. Joe, do you want to just briefly where we are with that, the data center and what this helps you to accomplish?
Yes, sir. So the thing that really initiated our thinking along these lines is we had some major facilities, infrastructure projects that we had to accomplish in order for the data center to remain viable. And specifically, I'm talking about some power renovation. In the existing data center, we've got some single points of failure in power, which for the IT infrastructure that drives the city, that's not a good thing. So when we started looking at those possibilities, we looked out at city or at commercial data centers, because that's obviously a direction that a lot of major businesses are going. There's also a couple other cities or government entities in the state that are looking in that direction. We happen to have one in the city of Mesa that not only is a top-notch data center facility, but also has some city-owned fiber that runs very close to it. So that allowed us to really cut down on the connectivity issues as well. So at the end of the day, we get a facility that has dedicated security and physical security. I'm talking about guards at the doors and things like that. We get a facility that's built to be a data center that houses a number of other businesses, and it has, so we gain some benefit in scale. That the use of HVAC and power is a lot more efficient, and we get closer to the internet, closer to other potential cloud services that we may be able to get, and we get out of the future need of other major facility infrastructure projects.
Assuming they have all the uptime guarantees and stuff to, you know, and all the redundancy that data centers are typically known for, you know, 100% uptime or 99.999% and all that kind of stuff.
At 18, that's a question.
Oh, was that a question?
Yeah. Yes. Sorry.
I apologize.
I should inflect on the end. So go ahead.
Yes, Councilmember Richens. The data center does provide a 5-9s guarantee, 99.999%. They also have redundant power, redundant HVAC.
And it was built for this purpose?
Yes, sir.
The AT&T building?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And it's in Mesa, yeah. So it makes it close by. So it really is, works out really well for us.
Mr. Cavanaugh.
And just to clarify, is this the data center that's at Allen School and University? The large
yes,
center
sir.
There?
Yes, sir.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Luna.
I just returned from National League of Cities, and one of the things they talked about is cybersecurity, and I'm glad that you're working towards that. And they talked about ransomware, and maybe it'd be nice to have some kind of presentation in terms of how we have a secure system here in the city and how that works, and that we wouldn't be subject to some kind of ransom and held hostage. So anyway, I just thought that was fascinating. That's something that's happening currently.
Okay.
We will certainly work on that, Councilmember Luna.
Thank you very much. I think we're in the process of reviewing the agenda for the July 11th meeting. So we're made it, I think, to agenda item 3, looking at these various purchase contracts. Yes, Mr. Thompson.
On 3L, I just want to make sure that we're notifying all possible utilities that would ever want to be in University Drive between Sossaman and 88th Street, and Signal Butte between Southern and Weir, and Southern between 58 and Power, that we are resurfacing those roads and they will not be allowed to open cut those streets once they are complete. Hmm. Are we notifying?
We'll notify them, but I'm not going to guarantee that backside. We will notify, yes.
Okay. That's what
no, I can't guarantee the other.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Still working our way through agenda item 3. 4 is taking action on various resolutions. 5 is receiving public comment on ordinances. 6, also receiving public comment on zoning ordinances. Okay, so are we good for now to leave everything on the July 11th calendar on the consent agenda? All right. Thank you. The next item on our agenda then is item 2A, to hear a presentation and discuss a new zoning district, the Employment Opportunity District. Mr. Wellesley.
Mayor and Council, I'm going to turn this over quickly to Lisa Davis and Jay O'Donnell to give you the actual presentation. But as Planning Department has been working with the Economic Development Office to see what we can do to help facilitate large employment development in Mesa, we've looked at the LA Road Tech Corridor and found a way to do that even better. And so that's what this is about, a new zoning district that will allow us, again, to facilitate these large employment users. So I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Davis for a presentation.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Council members, this is a presentation on the Employment Opportunity District. I do have Jay O'Donnell here with me today from Economic Development. A little bit of background on it. We have been working with Economic Development looking for, actually they've been receiving more requests for larger mega sites, 100-acre sites that are shovel ready, in place, zoning entitlements or shortened entitlement processes. So we were looking for an employment district that would address that. And in the past, there was the Elliott Road Technology Corridor that we rezoned with a PAD overlay, which brought us most of the way there as far as reducing those entitlement processes. But it does require coming back to City Council for an approval of a development agreement. So working just a little bit harder, we came together and now have the Employment Opportunity District, which it would be typically staff-initiated, would require 160 acres of property. General plan designation would be the employment opportunity as well as the employment mixed use. The land uses would align with council policies, and there would be a concurrent development plan that would be approved at the same time as the rezoning that would establish all the expectations for industries to develop as well as the a tailored development plan. Could be approved as a floating zone, which would have an opt-in allowance for that, like we have in the downtown. We have the form-based code where you can opt in, and that would change your zoning, and that would be an administrative process. Again, if we use the floating zone, the property owner would maintain their current zoning. If it was LI or AG, they would maintain that zoning designation until they opt in. It would be a two-step process. Again, the public hearing process would be the typical public hearing process. Staff initiated, though, really trying to establish that up front, still going through the public hearing, allowing for public input, creating that tailored development plan. And then once that's in place, step two is just all administrative. It would be an administrative opt-in to change the zoning. If it's a floating zone or if it's a base zone, it would be an administrative and a site plan approval. The incentives, again, are the streamlined entitlement process. It's an economic development tool. They have it out there. The entitlements are in place. The public hearings have been done. So it's all administrative from that point. The use of the EO zone would be going forward, potentially as the Pecos Road between Power and Ellsworth. Actually, on the heels of this, we should have a plan that will be coming forward in the next few months for that area. And then potential areas are Ellsworth between Elliott Road and Ray, and the inner loop area of the airport. With that, that concludes my presentation. If you have any questions for me or Jay, I'd be happy to answer them.
So, Mayor and Council, we just wanted to, this item is on your agenda for approval. But this is unique again. It's an opt-in provision, so we're not designating a specific area, but we find that in our conversations with some of these, did you use the word mega projects? I think it's the term. 160 acres is a significant project. There's very few areas that would allow for employment in the city where this is going to be possible, right, John? And so, mostly around the airport, the gateway area. But we wanted, if we can put it in place, it helps us to compete with a lot of other nationally, other areas where they've already designated large commerce or business parks that are they may have this in. But again, we're working with the property owners. It's not just something we do without their consent. But it does give us kind of a speed to planning, speed to getting the deal done. It helps us give an advantage and provide some certainty in our conversations with the development community. Sometimes when we're having to talk about going through the zoning process, it kind of puts a chill on it a little bit. It doesn't mean we won't already have had a thorough vetting through the public hearing process and a development agreement that lays out standards. But we do think there is some advantage to this. We've seen, I guess, the precursor of this work with Apple. We're working it with on the Elliott Road corridor, the Elliott Road Technology Corridor. And this is kind of the next evolution of that further south, but in this general area.
Great. What would be an example of streamlining? I mean, streamlining sounds great. We want to streamline as much as possible, but what's the downside of streamlining? For another 160 acres, there's not a lot of 160 acre projects that we would be doing, so I guess it kind of begs the question, why don't we, if this is a good thing, why would it not be a good thing on smaller projects as well?
Mayor, if I may, the minimum for the zoning is 160 acres. We could have smaller areas within that actually get developed in smaller tracts, such as the Elliott Road Corridor. That was, I believe, 640 acres total, but we're coming back and they're developing it in smaller pieces. But again, since it is primarily geared towards the large projects, we want to start with that large size because we really are trying to plan for those big users overall.
Give me an example of things that are being streamlined. You know, if staff initiates this zoning overlay on a piece of property and someone comes in and says, I want to develop this 160-acre parcel and bring a bunch of jobs to Mesa, what do they now not have to do that they would have had to do previously?
Mayor, the main thing is the zoning would be in place, either because it applied it directly to the property or they just opt in, so out of that total hearing process. And then because of the standards that are put into the individual development plan, there's no need to go to P&Z for the site plan. Following that plan, staff will be able to approve that administratively. So again, that cuts a couple of months off the review process, keeps them out of that public hearing realm.
And John, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, a lot of these tracts that we're talking about today, they're zoned what? Ag?
Ag or the light industrial.
Right, light industrial. So they're already intended for similar purposes. At a much smaller scale than the rest of the city, they already have an underlying zoning in place because it's in a developed area. So most likely it already has a designated zoning in place. This is kind of out further on the edges where you have, they're still retaining their light industrial, large ag zoning. So it's still somewhat undefined for these types of developments.
And I think one of the things it does too is it speeds the entitlement process. And so you can literally take something that would normally take 12 months or 6 months, and you can shrink that down to within 2 to 3 months. So it gets the business up and running. They can go vertical a lot quicker and bring the jobs in, as long as they're willing to abide by that overlay.
Okay, that makes sense. I guess when you're going from raw land to something, this speeds the process on. And so it doesn't need to be applied to smaller pieces because smaller pieces have already transitioned from raw land to having some sort of zoning attached to them. Is that
Yeah, also, Mayor, if I could just add, it's, you know, it's what it's most similar to is a good example. It's similar to the planned community district, which is what Eastmark, the DMB project is. And so it really, the developer has to come up in front with a lot of the development standards. And so you see that on much larger developments. And so that's why it works on large developments. And so the similarity between sort of the PCD district and this district are sort of the analogs within our current code.
Well, I'm all for it. I'm just trying to get a little better prepared and wonder if we ought to do it on smaller pieces as well. But it sounds like there's just not a need to do that because the smaller pieces already have zoning attached to them, correct? Okay. So this is on our agenda to approve?
It's on for introduction tonight, Mayor, then approval.
Introduction tonight and then approval later. Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. Council, any additional questions on this? Thank you, ladies. Next item, item 2B, hear a presentation and discuss an update on upcoming construction projects in Southeast Mesa, including the Signal Butte Water Treatment Plant. Dan and Beth, good to have you here. Have we built anything bigger and more expensive in the history of the city of Mesa than the water treatment plant that we're in the midst of right now?
I think the rival to it would have been the Greenfield Water Reclamation Plant a few years back when we built it with in conjunction with Gilbert and Queen Creek.
Well, thank you. We look forward to their presentation.
So, good evening. Beth Huning, City Engineer, and I have my friend Dan Clevenger here with me, Water Resources. We wanted to come visit with you. We're kind of on the cusp of major construction projects in the Southeast Valley, and more specifically along Elliott Road from west of the 202 to east of Signal Butte. So the first slide today, we have a series of projects that you'll see. The very first contract we're coming forward with on Thursday is the first guaranteed maximum price for the water treatment plant on the northeast corner of Signal Butte and Elliott. But along with that project, we have a number of other things happening on Elliott. And if you look at the slide, just starting from the far right and working left, and you can go down and look at the schedules as well. First contract coming forward is Signal Butte Water Treatment Plant, which we need to be making water by May of 18 is what we need to be doing before the summer of 18. So that's why you see it coming first, and it's a longer lead item, so we have a lot more time to have for that to be constructed. Along with that will be the raw water line coming in from the Central Arizona Project Canal up to the plant, and that as well has to be on and just before the water plant comes online. In addition to that, we've got a series of Elliott Road improvements east of Signal Butte and along the water plant frontage. We have this being done in conjunction with the raw water line. We'll be improving the frontage along the water plant. We'll be working that using the same designer as the park. So I'll be talking about that in just a minute. On the same site there, we'll be doing a park that will kind of surround the water plant along the frontage and around the water plant. We had water. The money became available in July in this fiscal year to go ahead and start the design. We're going to use the same designer for the frontage and around the park, so it's all one consistent look and one consistent feel for the area. Following that, we also have an Elliott Road water line that will take water from the plant out to the Falcon Field Zone. So it's going to go down Elliott Road west all the way to Sossaman Road. You're going to see that under construction pretty quickly as well. Elliott Road improvements, or the Elliott Road Tech Corridor, we've kicked that off with hired a designer. We're in some of the initial visioning phases now, meeting with the stakeholders, meeting with DMB and some of the major property owners in the area, starting to talk to them about what they want that road to look like. And as a result of that, we'll also be getting rid of Councilmember Thompson's favorite roller coaster ride out there as we complete the road. So, and then on the far west, I want to point out the Southeast Mesa Bike and Ped Path as well. We have 2 miles of that under design right now. We're going to build as much of that as we can with the money that we have and extend it as far south. We do want to connect into as much as possible into Guadalupe, the Western Area Power Authority lines. There's a big easement underneath. And then it's hopefully we can get it down to Elliott and tie it into the tech quarter as well, so we can get kind of a loop going with some of our bike and ped paths in the area. So altogether, that's about $175 million in construction that we're getting ready to start here pretty quickly. And you're going to see construction out in this area probably for the next 2.5 years. So these are pretty major improvements to the area. If you look at the next slide, you can see I'm going to kind of focus in on the water plant, and then Dan's going to take it over from me. But this is the northeast corner of Signal Butte and Elliott. The water plant is in blue, and I'm going to leave that to Dan. But up in the far left corner, you may remember the Browning SRP receiving station and the new fire station we just built out there a few years back, Fire Station 219. The rest of the site in green is going to be the park and the frontage. And we have, I think, about $1.5 million to do some work within the park itself, build trails and do some amenities within the park. And then the frontage along the front will be built along with the raw water line, but it'll be all one designer, all one look and feel. So, Dan?
Mayor and Council, I'll be providing a little bit additional detail on the plant and the GMP. So what's out on site today is an existing pump station and an 8-million-gallon reservoir. That's all that's out there on the site. It's fed by groundwater. The new plant will be fed by the CAP canal, which is Colorado River water. That allows us to be less reliant on groundwater and wells. Phase one will be a 24-million-gallon-a-day facility, ultimately going to 48 million gallons. That'll be, I think we have two expansions planned to get to that 48. So we've seen an increase in demand both in accounts in Southeast Mesa and actual consumption. We have seen about over the last 5 years about a 5% increase per year in demand, in water demand. That equates to about 140 million gallons per year. So annually for 5 years, on average, we've been seeing 140 million gallon increase per year out here. And that last bullet talks a little bit about economic development employment districts, and which includes the Elliott Road Technology Corridor. This is important because just one industry can make a big difference to a water plant. So like we saw with Apple, the original version of Apple was going to be equivalent to about 7,000 households. So when we have one or two industries coming in down there, and there's been a lot of interest. So you can ask the economic development folks. The past several weeks, we've had a lot of folks interested in locating to Southeast Mesa, so makes this plant even more critical so we can be ready for them. The first GMP, or guaranteed maximum price, is the $36 million contract. That's one you see on the agenda for the 11th. That'll be next week. That'll include mass grading, excavation, all the concrete work necessary for the plant, and the underground piping system. The third sub-bullet there is the ozone treatment system, which would be purchased. That's our disinfection system for this plant. In GMP2, we'd come to you in about 3 months for the second contract, and you can see the items there that would be remaining. It's about twice as big of a contract, and that'll include the buildings, chemical system. Beth talked about the raw water line coming in. This will provide, get us ready to receive that, and then the solid handlings for the elements and things that are extracted from the water. So that's important as well. There's a number of benefits to splitting the GMP. Beth touched on them already. One, we're sitting at today about somewhere between 95 and 100% design, but a lot of elements are already designed and ready to go. So by putting them in the first contract, we can get a good head start and allows us to start construction about 4 months earlier, and then allows us to get long lead items too. I mentioned the ozone treatment system. That's a long lead item. So we can purchase that now and get that in so the plant can be done on time. And then also Beth mentioned the May 2018 substantial completion date. So we'd be making water then, getting ready for peak summer. Summer's our most critical time, and this would be important because we'd be able to meet that summer demand. It's just one less summer to worry about. Here's the schedule. Again, next week we're seeking your approval of the GMP-1 and followed by a notice to proceed. In about 3 months' time, we'd come back with GMP-2. That would build the remainder of the plant, again, followed by a notice to proceed. We'd start making water, and on May 11th, we hope to have the county approval. What they're approving is approval of construction. That's just to make sure everything's working properly, everything's being disinfected, and the water's ready to go. And then we get that into the system, and that's hopefully when folks can start using water in that new plant and relieve some of the demand down in Southeast Mesa. And then the final project completion, just wrapping up some punch list items, would be in August of 2018. If you can see, that's a little dark on my slide, but that's the operations building, so rendering. It'll look something like that. That's the first building you'd see once you pass beyond the wall through the gate there. A lot of thought went into this, and we've had to kind of came up with this collectively. And then this is an overview, a 3D model of the site. You can see all the buildings and some of the piping system below, kind of a neat shot. This is looking up and to the right is north. So that's kind of what it would look like from an aerial overview. So if there's any questions on those.
And just this? Quickly, going back to that first shot, yeah. So what you don't see, and Dan mentioned it, but we need to remember we are right across the street from a residential subdivision. So there'll be a, did you say 8 foot?
How tall? Yeah, we have an 8 foot wall.
8 foot wall. So actually when you're driving along, you'll maybe see the very top of this building. So you wouldn't see this, but we did try to be very sensitive to try to incorporate the design and even the outside elements along the street so it was consistent with the neighborhoods that are out there that are across the street.
You'll also notice some similarities to the fire station that's not too far away.
Right, so we're trying to be consistent in our architecture out there.
As pretty as this building is, why do we want to hide it behind an 8 foot wall?
One, for security purposes, security. Since it is our major source of water, so we don't want anybody coming in there. And then this looks nice here. I know when it gets built, it's still an industrial building, and it has a lot of trucks and equipment going in and around here. And it's not really intended to be a public facility where people come and go. So typically, security has been more and more the issue, frankly, for these facilities than anything else. But that's why it's important to understand one of the things we are trying to do at the same time is make it fit in the neighborhood. And that's where Beth showed is wrapping around all of this green space so it does feel like, and we want to invite the public to enjoy that space around the treatment plant and have that experience going around there. So,
thank you, Council. Any questions on this? Thank you very much. We'll look forward to a ribbon cutting in a couple of years. Next item is 2C, hear a presentation and discuss the community outreach effort for the proposed development of the northwest corner of Country Club Drive and Main Street and provide direction on a memorandum of understanding with Chicanos por la Causa for the development. Mr. McVeigh.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Council. A few months ago, I was here presenting on the proposal from Chicanos por la Causa for the development of Country Club in Maine. At that time, Council gave us the direction that we wanted, that you wanted us to go out to the community, introduce the proposal, and give CPLC a chance to introduce themselves to the neighborhood. Since that time, we have completed two neighborhood outreach meetings. But before I get into those, I want to give you a little bit of background, remind us all how we got here. We released an RFP early in January of 2016. We received our proposals in January 2016. We released the RFP in 2015. We only received one proposal. It was from Chicanos por la Causa. We did have a selection committee of city staff and outside two outside members that reviewed that against set criteria that was included in the RFP. All the members of the selection committee were agreed that it met the review criteria that we had put in to the RFP, so we brought it forward for the council's consideration. The site is approximately 2.5 acres, of which the city is the major landholder, although there are two other property owners that would need to participate in this in order for any development proposal to happen here. The response that we received from CPLC was for a 5-story 200-unit apartment development with approximately 20,000 square feet of ground floor retail to be developed as in two phases, the first phase being 80 units and the majority of the retail component, and the second phase being 120 units and a parking deck. This is an image of the site plan as is included in the proposal. One of the key things that I want to reiterate, though, that this is a proposal that was put together in response to an RFP. We wanted to make clear that should this project move forward, there could be changes, and there likely will be changes to the proposal itself, whether it's through the site design, through the building design, even the layout of the building as it exists today could change as we work through more of more neighborhood efforts to refine the development. This slide is a gives you some of the financial side of the return and benefit to the city. This is estimates based on their proposal of construction tax, employment, sales tax. And in the end, they were looking at a $42 million project. So, to the community outreach efforts. We held two formal public meetings, and we held also were invited to attend the Mesa Grande Community Alliance Steering Committee. We, at the Mesa Grande meeting, there was approximately 20 attendees. We worked through exercises to try and get the idea of what people like about the project, what they don't like about the project. If they had their choice, what kind of commercial activity would they like to see? It was a consistent outreach effort. We did that at the two neighborhood meetings as well. One was held June 9th and the other was held June 16th. These were honestly very well attended. 50 attendees at the first one, 60 at the second. While that doesn't seem like a big number for generally for zoning entitlement type of outreach, this is actually a pretty well attended meeting. We also had on our website the ability for people to provide us comments through a comment link. And we received additional 20 comments from that. This is a sample of some of those comments received. There is a report in your agenda packet that has the detail of all the comments that were received. But these were some of the ones that we saw as a consistent a theme. And what people liked about the proposal is that it is a market rate proposal. They do like that it's a mixed use and that there's going to be some retail opportunities. There is a number of people that like the building design, but then you'll see that there's a number of people that don't like the building design as well. There's a fair number of people that are happy to see this unproductive piece of dirt finally have a proposal and hopefully potentially have development. Concerns are concerns that we have been hearing that the council is well aware of. There is still concern that even at market rate that this isn't going to is not going to raise the property values of the neighborhood. There's concern that rental versus owner that there be preference for owner occupied over rentals. There's some concern that the building's too tall, and then there is also some people that thought the building was too short. So I can balance that really. And then there's also concern with the number of and unit mix count. So that there's studio, one bedroom, two bedroom, and three bedroom. There's concern that that because there's a greater number of studio and one bedroom that we're going to get more of a transient population. Whereas if we have two and three bedroom units, we'll probably get young families, potentially people with higher incomes that can afford that higher rent as well. And then also definitely something that we have to think about is how this could be impacting the neighborhood.
I'm sorry, Mr. Luna.
What has been the trends to similar projects like this? Because I know there's been similar projects built throughout the country. What have been some of the trends on those developments?
Mayor, Councilmember Luna, the trends go in a lot of directions. So you have the trend for micro units where you've got a new development that's approved in Phoenix that's going to be 500 units of 500 square foot apartments that they're being constructed. So you have that trend in the really dense area. You also have the trend, say, Scottsdale for super high-end condominium space that are, you get your penthouse loft and you pay $1 million and you get to have the best view in the city. But recently, what we've been experiencing, not Mesa, because we haven't seen too much light rail development, but what the Valley has been experiencing along light rail is a lot of market rate apartment developments. It's downtown Phoenix where you're getting some condo developments, but some of those condo developments that started during the peak of the bubble in 2007, 2008, when they finished, when the new ownership came in and they finished, they became apartments. So I could give you a trend. If you ask me for evidence that there's one trend that's leading, I could probably go find evidence that there's that is the leading trend. But I think that this idea of having apartments, rental apartments along light rail is a pretty consistent trend. There's a fair amount of unmet demand in the valley in general for transit-oriented development. There will be a trend. I imagine that the bubble will somehow will start again, and there will be time where for sale units will become more marketable. But right now, what we're experiencing is that the market isn't responding favorably to condominiums, condominium type developments yet. Some of the things that people liked about the retail opportunities, they'd like to see some restaurants, they'd like to see unique retail, you know, continuing that trend of our downtown. We have unique retail opportunities, they'd like to see that happen. They don't want to see competing retail, and they're excited about this idea of having a bicycle shop. One of the tenants that has already expressed some interest in the project. And definitely nothing that will detract from the neighborhood, like the idea of check cashing stores or pawn stores. So that is a summary of the outreach we've completed. Our next steps, if council gives us that direction, is to enter into a memorandum of understanding with Chicanos Por La Causa. And that memorandum of understanding will essentially give them 6 months of exclusive negotiation rights where the city wouldn't be out there trying to market the property to any other developers, for them to be able to try and gain site control. If they can show evidence of site control, then there could be an extension of that MOU for an additional 6 months to then start negotiating actual development agreement details. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. McVeigh. We do have a request to speak here, but prior to that, council, any questions for Jeff? Okay, thank you. We have a request to speak from Dee Montague. Dee, please come forward. Dee, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Dee Montague. I live at 553 North Orange Street.
I need to get better at reminding people, and I'm not anticipating a problem here, but I need to remind people they have 3 minutes to speak.
Yes. Thank you. So I thought one time I'd run for council, but I don't like the kind of soda pops you have here. So
we got a whole refrigerator in there.
I appreciate Jeff's meetings. I went to all three of those, and I think his representation has been quite fair, except I didn't see any interest from local residents for the bike shop portion. One of the things that seemed to be let me first say that voting for the memorandum of understanding is a good thing. I think you ought to do that. But I think that we ought to look for the best project possible. I think that they could come up with a better project that would have more private ownership, that would raise the income level of people that come. One of the things that I felt that was a constant thread from my friends and neighbors that live in that area is that in a sequential manner of development, let's give our full support to the ASU project, to the vote that'll be coming for that, and then see what interest there is. There, you know, it's kind of alarming that there is only one person that responded, although we've been told here in this meeting and privately with Jeff that there are others interested, but that not having control of the property limits the number of interest, the amount of interest, because they don't know what the other two owners of the property might want to charge for their portion of it. So I would say we insist on the project that we dream of, that we've been talking about with the light rail when it started talking so many years ago, that it was going to raise the rents, it's going to raise the business opportunities. I think the catalyst for that is ASU. And so I'd be interested in getting that vote over with in November. See if we can make that a successful campaign, and then talk with it. I was impressed with CPLC. I think they ought to be a player in our downtown development. I'm glad that they purchased the property of the Big Apple. I understand they're negotiating for other properties in that area. I think they ought to be part of the downtown development. They seem to have a great approach to their business end of their thing. One of the distinctive things they mentioned was that they have a property along the light rail at 12th Street, 11th and 12th Street in Washington. To me, that would be more like further away from the intersection of the country club, which is a state highway, and Main Street, which I realize is not the best business opportunity in all of Mesa, but it is the gateway to our neighborhood, And in that response of the light rail, we want the best possible thing that could go there. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Montague. Thank you, Jeff. And any questions for Mr. McVeigh or for Mr. Montague? This is agendized to get direction, and I will be happy to share my thoughts on it. I agree. I'm excited that we have interest from Chicanos por la Casa. It would have been great to have gotten more response, but I understand why. This is still a challenging piece when we don't have site control. What we're asking a developer to do is to come in and spend a lot of money and wow us with a project that they understand we're going to have very high development standards for, because it's the gateway for our community, for our downtown. It's got to be a showpiece. So that requires a lot of investment of time and energy, but it's coming into a deal where there are two other property owners that you have to negotiate with. So it's somewhat, somewhat speculative to spend a lot of time and energy on this. So Chicanos por la Casa, this is a great organization, and this is a for-profit market rate project. So like Mr. Montague, would like to do everything I can to encourage them to be interested in Mesa and to be more involved in Mesa, not only in the for-profit activities they have, but also in the human service ventures that we share with them. So I will be enthusiastically endorsing the Memorandum of Understanding. However, I would echo some of the concerns that Mr. Montague raised, which is this is the gateway to our downtown. There's no rush from my point of view. If the ultimate project that comes back from Chicanos por la Causa is not stunning, if it's not transformative, if it's not going to be a catalyst for raising the bar in downtown, then I'll be inclined to pass and see if some amount of time doesn't create an economic atmosphere for that type of a project to occur. But 6 months of giving Chicanos por la Causa the opportunity to try to put something together and to come back and create a project that's going to be a great front door for our downtown is something that I'm enthusiastically in favor of. Mr. Cavanaugh.
Thank you. I'm also in favor of moving ahead. Appreciate the work, Jeff, that you've done with the community outreach. This is one of the gateways. We have three other corners at that intersection with past decisions that I think we could all probably call into question as gateway monuments. So I think this proposal, if it moves forward and engages the community, engages the staff for the kind of quality development, I think it will set certainly a much better tone than the other three corners do as part of the gateway. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Luna.
I'm also in favor of it. I'm quite familiar with Chicanos por la Casa, and their work they've done a stellar job. And, certainly we need to take in consideration the neighbors and their sentiments relative to that development. So I'm in favor of moving this forward.
Thank you. Mr. Richens.
There's some components of the MOU that I think we need to discuss. And I feel like I'm having a real estate negotiation in public right now. And I would feel more comfortable if we could maybe schedule an e-session to talk about this, some of the key things that we want to look for in the MOU going forward, much like we did with ASU. I see it's agendized for next Monday, so I'm not sure how to facilitate that given that we don't have a study session on Thursday. But
so this is an MOU.
Right.
And we would then come back with a development agreement later. So this isn't going to get into the real estate details.
Well, when we negotiated the ASU MOU, we had several discussions.
True. And that, I think that was an MOU, granted, that was an MOU that went into a lot more detail than this one will go into.
I think there's a lot more detail that probably should be considered in this deal going forward.
Okay. Well, then, because the intention of this MOU is to do what, Jeff?
An agreement to negotiate another.
Essentially give them the exclusive right to go assemble the property and then come back and then move forward from that point. Right now, our difficulty with this agreement and the reason this property is not going to move is you have three different property owners.
You need 6 months to...
Well, we can make it less than that. I'm saying we can make it less than that.
That
example number one. You know, okay. Do we need 6 months? Do we, you know, is this the right? I don't know. I didn't want to have a lot of this negotiation. It puts us at a disadvantage to have an MOU discussion in public.
Well,
and
I don't want to go down that road
in a public session.
I understand. I don't think we'll get this done by the 11th then.
Is there a draft MOU currently?
It's posted for your. You saw it's on the May 11th meeting.
Okay, right. So that's on our agenda that we went
right.
over earlier.
One element that I guess I'd like to point to is that with the ASU, we actually had to include in the MOU some of the broad deal points, the lease terms, in order for ASU, for the Board of Regents, to be able to act on the MOU there on their end. This MOU, to your point, includes no deal points beyond this is an exclusive a period of time that they have exclusive negotiation rights. It's really the agreement is that we won't be marketing this project or this property out from under you during this period, and we'll work in good faith to give you the opportunity to be able to assemble the land.
But if Mayor and Council, if you want to wait, we can. I'm just saying we probably won't we won't be discussing this till August.
I don't know, it's up to my colleagues, I suppose. I'm just one vote here, so, but I do think there needs
to be some additional consideration. No, it's fine, and I'm fine with it. I'm just saying, listen, if we have to wait, we can wait. It's just
Because
of our schedule, we're not in a position to turn things around before, because the council doesn't meet again until the 11th.
If I were to get you some suggestions to be included in the MOU,
but I think
tomorrow,
the whole council probably needs to see those. And I don't know how you want to do it. We could, but I don't know.
Well, that's a gym to figure out how to do.
Yeah.
But
I would prefer if that's where the council wants to go, we just defer this till August.
I don't think it hurts anything to defer.
I see we have some representatives from Chicanos por la Causa here. Is that a present a problem for Chicanos por la Causa if we slow things down a bit? And I'm sorry, sir, if I could invite you forward. Is that a problem on your end?
I believe our preference would be to move forward as soon as possible. We obviously want to do that in a way that the city is comfortable with it. However, I guess we were under the impression, and we had our legal team review the MOU, and we sort of felt that it was it didn't necessarily define everything. And in doing so, that was sort of intentional, that I believe on your guys' part, they really just sort of said, you know, give us 6 months. It could take a lot longer than 6 months, to be quite honest, Councilman Richens, just to get these people to the table to have a real conversation about what we're talking about. But give us 6 months. Let us try to put this together so that we can then come back and sort of negotiate what a real development agreement between us and the city could look like.
Do we not have an indication from the parties that they're willing to sit down and enter into a negotiation now? Because I was under the impression when we issued this RFP in the first place that they were willing participants. So
yes.
I'm assuming that it's not going to take 6 months because we already have willing participants. Is that correct?
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, we do. We had letters of support for the RFP from both of the private property owners, but that letter did not say that I am going to sell my property and this is my price. It said, I'm allowing you, city, to include my property in your request for proposals. I'm a willing participant. I will be open to the negotiations. I think, honestly, the 6 months is the number that we as staff put into the MOU with the assumption that it may be a more difficult negotiation than we anticipate. If it happens faster, what that gives us is time to start negotiating some of those deal points for a development agreement, and maybe we could even bring those back a little sooner to council than we had anticipated otherwise.
Yeah, the MOU is, it's less than a page. It's intended to give them the opportunity to go and assemble the property. And that way, when they come back to us before, they spend a lot of time on design and programming. We know that they have it's under contract, that they can purchase it and move forward if we all agree. And that doesn't determine anything related to the programming, the design, but it just says, here's a period of time, go work with the property owners, come back with a proposal, come back with us and tell us you have control of the property.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So I guess we're giving them 6 months, it could happen sooner.
Right.
That's all this is doing, as I understand it, as I've read it.
Yes.
So we're not getting into the other elements. So we want them to go get, from a real estate perspective, go assemble the property. Then I think the message I think they're hearing now is, do that, but then don't go beyond that. Come back and tell us you've accomplished that. Now let's have a conversation about the transformational design, the makeup of the development, and get into those specifics.
So what's that date take us to? December, middle of December?
Where are we?
July, middle of December.
January.
How about we make it November 9th? They don't get it done by the election.
That's fine. I mean, we're
ready to move on.
Listen, I think we could say we could make it shorter, and then they could come back to us and give us progress reports on their conversations with the adjacent property owners.
This is not a discussion I want to have in public.
So, Mayor and Council, one other I can we have it set up as a 6-month window that the city then has to approve if it extends beyond that. There has to show that there's been progress in the property negotiations. We could always reverse, you know, pair that back and still have it as the city has to say, yes, we've seen progress, let's continue this MOU. You know, if it makes you, if it's more comfortable, and we'll have to see if Nick shakes his head yes. But we reduce that initial term to 3 months and say, if you've shown progress in 3 months, then we can extend the MOU another 3 months to let you continue working on to get site control.
Okay.
That's great. Although, frankly, from my perspective, I don't see any reason for urgency here. I think time is on our side. I think that after the ASU vote, we may be in there may be more urgency and
which
more
is why I think we needed to have a discussion, an executive session on this to make out to talk through that, because that's an important part of the strategy of this site. So.
Okay.
Just saying.
Well, I'd be happy to.
So 3 months is fine if you want to do
3 months and 3 months is fine with you?
Yeah.
Okay. So that seems to be okay.
We'll make
with
that change. That's the way it'll be. We'll make that change to the document that's on your July 11th meeting.
Okay. Great. Does that work for everyone?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next item on our agenda then is item 2D. Appointments to various boards and committees. Is there a motion? Thank you. And a second? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. That passes. Item 3 is approval of minutes from an executive session held on June 23rd. Is there a motion for that? Thank you. And second? Do you get that? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Really? Okay. That's good. That's great, because I have no idea who the motion and second was. Item 4, acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Is there a motion? Thank you. And a second? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All in favor, please say aye. Did I do that already? All right. Any opposed? Thank you. Item 5, hear reports on meetings or conferences attended. Council, yes, Mr. Thompson.
I think the only thing that I really want to say is not about, I guess it's not a meeting or a conference I attended, but the 4th of July celebration. I just wanted to thank staff. They did a phenomenal job of getting everything set up. Spent a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of effort. And kudos to you and your staff for pulling it off, making it such a huge success.
Yes, thank you to Steve. Nice job. Please pass that on to your team as well. I know there was a large group of city staff and vendors working on it. It was a great event for members of the public who missed it. I'm sorry, you missed a great 4th of July. Plan on spending your 4th of July in downtown Mesa next year. I guarantee you'll have a great time. I should note that as part of that, we had a naturalization ceremony. Over 100 individuals took the oath to become citizens of the United States. That was a very inspiring event. Mr. Cavan and I were very honored to participate in that. So, again, thank you. Nice event. Next item number 6, is scheduling of meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
So our next study session / council meeting will be Monday, July 11th. And then following that, we'll take the summer break and we'll return on Thursday, August 18th for a study session at 7:30. Now, between then, in addition, on Monday, we will have the ribbon cutting for Station 203 at 324 South Alma School Road, and that will be at 10 a.m. on Monday, July 11th. Thank you.
Thank you. Council, anything else? But prior to our adjournment, we do have a couple of meetings right after this. Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn. Thank you in a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We are adjourned.